Conference record has joined the conference.
All right, Ian, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, awesome. My name is John Strum with the Grateful Web. I have a few questions starting off. You guys have a new, Dumpster Punk has a new album coming out on July 30th titled Dirty World.
Dirty Word.
The first album, Dirty Word, yeah, sorry about that. It's the first album with Nicky on drums and the most recent since Everybody Wants Him in 2010, right?
Yep.
Cool. Could you tell me a little bit about the recording of the album, kind of what changed from Everybody Wants Some and what Nicky was able to bring to the fold?
Music-wise, Nicky brings her vibe in her. You know, she's the only one in the band not from New Orleans, which adds a different element. She studied a bunch of the New Orleans stuff, you know, to expand her horizons also. But she brings her fierce, crazy, ruckus drumming and just overall musicalness. She sings on a bunch of stuff. You know, she just all around brought it. It was a nice addition to the recording process.
Cool. Speaking about the recording process, do you enjoy that? Is that as fun to you as, like, one of the live shows?
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different application of what we do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we gotta put our heads together. And, for a lot of the songs for this record, it either came from, like, somebody would come in with an idea or there's only two covers on the record. So those were, one of them we kind of knew we were going to do, and the other was a last-minute thing. And a lot, either someone would come in with a song or we'd go, remember there was this one sound check, somebody might have started a piece of a groove, and then we'd all, build it from there. Or some of it was just all five of us sitting in the room. And that's the kind of stuff that happens, some of the tracks, when we all get together and just go for the creative angle instead of just the show angle,
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I listened to Blues Wave and Raise the House on the website. Are those both featured on the new album?
Yeah, those are both on there. Blues Wave was a Nick song from a while ago, pretty much. And Raise the House was one that it was pretty much all Tony on that one. But Raise the House, we have a couple guests on that. My dad's on that. Art Neville, Rebirth Brass Band's on that. Troy, Tremont Shorty's on that one. And Blues Wave, five of us crushing it.
Cool. What's it like kind of having all the guests on the album kind of in true New Orleans fashion? Having like your father, like you mentioned, Art on there, Troy from Trauma Shorty, obviously, he's been doing a lot these days. It's kind of cool seeing, all the different artists based out of New Orleans kind of working with each other. What can you kind of say about that connection with musicians in New Orleans?
I mean, it's a real organic thing here. It's not, everybody here damn near is in a different band with two other people from other bands almost at any given moment, So mm-hmm. It's all a big communal thing pretty much. And the way the guests happened on this, it was just like, depending on what the vibe of the song was, it was like, all right, call up, actually my dad was coming through the studio and we're like, you definitely should play on this. And we had some of the Rebirth guys just happened to call either Tony or Ivan. It was like, yo, y'all busy? And then they came through. And Troy, we actually got him on another track as well. He, in some of his spare time, came and knocked those out. It was just very, it wasn't involving much business feel on that end, which is good for the creative side of it.
Oh, yeah.
And on the song Dirty Word, we got Ani DeFranco did a verse or two on the end of that one, which was mm-hmm. another, like, fluke. Like, our guy who mixed the record, Mike Napolitano, is her husband. she just heard one of the tracks being mixed and was like, hey, I want to throw something on there. And then we got it back. It was like, damn, that's incredible.
Nice. It's nice how things work out like that.
Yep.
I think I read somewhere that Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers even makes an appearance.
Yep.
That's
that
true?
Was another. Yes, that's very true. That's on, that's actually on one of the covers on the, it's the Bette Davis cover. The song's called If I'm in Luck. That's one that Nikki sings lead on that. Flea and them were in town, like, recording a Chili Peppers video and just happened to hit up Ivan and we went and picked him up. And went and got like a snowball, crawfish boil, got some food, and then hit the studio. Actually, there was some Sports Center watching in there somewhere too, and then studio. And then it was just a very, if we had tried to plan out the day, it would have never worked. It only worked that well because we were just rolled with how it flowed, you know?
Yeah. Cool. So I know you guys started almost, 10 years ago, I believe, as, you know, kind of a Jazz Fest project. With Nikki on drums now and, you know, the current lineup you've had now for quite some time, is this pretty much cemented as the Dumpster Funk lineup going forward?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know. You never ask for that kind of change, and sometimes shit happens and you end up being better off in the right direction, you know. But yeah, we've been having a blast with what the lineup is now, which is the same except Raymond. You know, sometimes we have some of our other horn player friends or whoever come roll with us, but pretty much it's just us.
Cool. So what before Dumpster Funk, before you guys got that, you and Ivan started that up. I know you played, you know, with your family, with your father and the Neville brothers. And I think now simply the Nevilles. What were you doing besides that, really?
Well, when I was like a kid, I started sitting in with my dad and then with the Funky Meters.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was about like 18 or 19 was when I started playing with the Neville brothers. And then, like, I guess a couple years after that was... Yeah, when I was 21-ish was when Dumpster Funk started. So between Neville Brothers and Funky Meter stuff and floating around, you know, I've been friends with all the Lettuce guys for a while. And Russell Baptiste had a couple different bands that I play with also. Lately, side project-wise, I got Dr. Claw, which we don't play all that much with that band, but it's pretty killer what we do.
Cool. Let's see. So Nikki played and recorded with Beyonce, I think, before she joined you guys. And it seems like the whole band, you know, has been surrounded by huge names in the music industry, whether it's, you know, your father, like you mentioned, Art and the Meters and Funky Meters, the rest of the Neville family with the Neville brothers, Ivan playing with Keith Richards and the Stones. What's it like growing up with these, you know, musical legends as your family? And are there certain expectations, or were you basically destined to pick up one instrument or another at some point in your life?
I mean, I'm glad that I don't know any different, you know, which is cool. And it just, you know, you look back and recognize, you know, how crazy some things that happen when you're a kid. You just brush it off because you're a kid doing kid shit. But, you know, just all the people that I get to pick their brain here and there or just even have a conversation with that most people don't. I try to take whatever I can from those opportunities, whether it's directly music related or just dealing with playing music related or whatever, you know what I mean? Being in the mix of the music biz or how people react to years of experience of doing this shit, it's good to be able to hear that and try to absorb things from it.
So I imagine then that a bunch of the influences on your playing, you know, probably came from people like Leo and Brian Stoltz and Meters and Funky Meters and just being around, you know, your whole family. What was some of the music you listened to growing up outside of, you know, your family's music and you know, those kind of things.
I mean, when I was in like sixth grade, me and some friends had a band that had about 15 different band names. But we would play like, you know, Green Day and Rage Against the Machine to some Meters and New Orleans type stuff. It was all over the board. I listened to a lot of hip hop. I listened to Radiohead back in the day. I listened to, you know, tons of Beatles. I listened to all kind of stuff. Guitar player wise, I'd say like Freddie Stone, you know, played with Sly and the Family Stone, Sly's brother. Oh. And probably Gary Scheider and Glenn Goins from Parliament. Two of my, like, once I started playing guitar a little more, were definitely my favorite guitar players. Probably Hendrix's Standard Issue, and I've listened to hopefully every piece of Hendrix that was recorded. But, you know, as far as a different, more funk vibe, it's definitely... Definitely Freddie and Gary Scheider and those guys. I got to do this session that Gary Scheider was on a couple of years ago. That was pretty hip to be able to play with the original Parliament cast. Yeah. You know?
He passed pretty recently also, didn't he?
Yeah, it was like probably three years ago, I think.
Wow, yeah, so that's certainly a memorable experience, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Kind of going back to the band with Dumpster Funk, what's it like having two bass players on stage with Tony and Nick, and maybe, I guess, even three sometimes? I know Ivan's picked one up before. How does that define
We've never had
bounds?
Three involving Ivan, but we have had three bass players before. Just the other day, Victor Wooten came, sat in with us. It was Tony and Nick and Victor Wooten. That was pretty deep.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. But, I mean, as far as playing with two bass players on a regular, Tony and Nick are not your normal terrestrial bass players. It's much easier said than done what they do. Most bass players are trying to play the same shit, I feel like, and they just naturally tend to be in different areas of the groove. Mm-hmm. They just, without even trying to plan it out, just how they roll, it just works itself out for the most part. It's pretty incredible. And that makes it, like, it leaves space open for, you know, myself and Ivan to have room to add to the skank funkness, which is, you know, it's easy to get muddled up and play all kind of craziness without paying attention to what's going on. But those two started by not stumbling all over each other, and then we just fill in the holes.
Nice. Let's see, I recently did an interview with Miles Doty of Slightly Stupid, and we were talking about how cool it was having you and Ivan and Carl Denson around for the live recording they did at, or I guess you guys all did, at Bob Weir's TRI Studios.
Yeah, TRI thing. That was pretty cool.
How did you guys get involved with Slightly Stupid, and what kind of brought around the whole concept of doing that show at TRI?
I guess I kind of started getting involved with them through mutual, through their management, basically some friends of mine who's now same management that we have. And then I did a couple gigs with them, and then that TRI thing, Dumpster was up in the area anyway, pretty much. So it was just kind of no-brainer to go over there and jam with those guys that day. It was like a whole one day, you know, thing, hang out, play some interviews and stuff. And then it just was, you know, we're already over there, and those guys are cool and our boys and whatnot. So plus that studio was killer. So I wanted to go check that out. And
yeah, I've heard
like,
some pretty cool things about it.
Yeah, it's very nice. And actually Bob Weir, he played with Funky Meters back when I was like 15 or something. The first time I got to play with him. That was cool going to him for a minute also.
Yeah, okay. So you kind of knew him, I mean, in one form or another from when you were younger.
I knew him before I knew the Slightly Stupid guys.
Oh, cool. Did you listen to any Grateful Dead or anything like that growing up?
I'm not a Deadhead, but I've heard Dead. I've heard Dead. I don't really go for the Dead on my iPod, so to speak, but
right.
I've heard a decent amount of Dead, I feel like.
So if we were to turn on your iPod right now on a tour or something like that, what would we kind of be hearing?
Well, my actual iPod was mysteriously either stolen or something, but that's beside the point. I'd say in my recently loaded phone iPod, I had some boys of ours, this band called the London Souls, like rock trio out of Brooklyn. You know those guys?
I do.
Those dudes are killer. I was definitely wearing out their first record, and well, they're getting their new one made me want to go back and listen to the other one again first. So I've been wearing some of that stuff out. Let's see. I had some J. Cole. That's some, like, he has this hip hop, it's his hip hop cat, MC cat from here that does some Saints related songs that I've been jamming on. But I'm not sure other than that. I listen to a lot of Wee Funk Radio. You have the Wee Funk?
I don't.
It's like,
I know.
It's a 2-hour radio show. These guys out of Montreal, they, every Friday from midnight to 2 a.m., they do like a funk, hip hop, Afrobeat vibe kind of show that just always schools me on a bunch of stuff that I hadn't heard that I go back and you can like go back to their back catalog and on their website and, you know, see all everything they played, the whole playlist and everything. So it's cool to be able to go dig and find new stuff through that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of determines where my iPod's going to go next.
Cool. Let's see here. So you guys are going, you're hitting the road pretty soon, actually. In a few days, I know you've got a show in Westchester, New York. Are you guys doing a pretty lengthy summer tour, or is it kind of like one-off, jumping around the festivals?
Yeah, it's a lot of festival hopping, you know, Thursday through Sunday kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The occasional long-ass drives in between. We're doing Westchester this weekend coming up, and then the next weekend we're driving up to Milwaukee. We'll have to Cedarburg, Wisconsin, and then the Grand Rapids, and then head home, and then fly somewhere the next 3-4 days later. You know, that's pretty much the schedule. August, we're hitting outside lands.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you know, mid-August, well, you know, early August, really, it should be a lot of record support gigs, hopefully.
Right.
But, it's pretty much festival stuff on the books for now. Like, we're hitting, we're going to Australia in October.
Cool.
Do some festy type stuff down there. That'll be this band's first time down there, so that'll be good. But I assume the driving for, you know, days and days in a row will come in the fall.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Good old fall tours.
Yeah. I mean, the record will be out, so it should be killer, hopefully.
Yeah, and so that's July 30th, I think?
Yeah, July 30th.
Nice. So saying Australia, kind of getting into international markets and stuff, I caught you guys' shows on Jam Cruise this year, which is a wild time. It was my first time on the boat. pure madness, really.
Yep.
What was it like performing on a cruise ship like that? You know, where you're living, eating, breathing with the rest of, with the fans and other artists. And how does it kind of compare to like your guys' local gigs at Jazz Fest?
Yeah, I was about to say Jam Cruise is like floating Jazz Fest, basically, except you don't have to drive to the gigs. It's, you know, it shows from noon. I hear there's shows before noon, but I'm usually not any part of those.
Right.
Till, you know, 5 a.m. And that's the same schedule as Jazz Fest, basically. But the boat is just its own entity because you're just there. It's, as my good friend Scarrick said, Jam Cruise, it's the festival you can't leave, which is, sums it up perfectly in the best and the worst sense of it all. You know what I mean? It's awesome being like just able to stumble over to the next room and catch one of your other boys' bands playing and holler at a bunch of fans that are heading your way or leaving the show you're trying to go see, and they're like, it's killing, go check it out, and then find them somewhere, other show, you know, 6 hours later, still raging.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely an experience. It's definitely an experience.
Yep. Are you back on the next one?
Yeah. So you guys will be on the next one.
It's always in early January,
I believe.
Yep.
Cool. Well, kind of going with Jazz Fest in New Orleans, I get down there probably two or three times a year with the band I work for called JJ Gray and Mofro, and that's I was on the boat with. And it always, you know, it seems like every time we're down there, crowds, spirits are always high, everyone's having a good time, you know, whether we're at Tipitina's, Howlin' Wolf, wherever. And it just, to me, there's something about New Orleans that's different than, you know, the rest of the world, the rest of the country, that's kind of hard to put into words. But can you, you know, try and do that? Just, you know, say a little something about it, what it means to you?
That's a good question. Let's see. New Orleans, it means, if this is easy for me to say, it means home to me, but so many other people get here and feel at home, which you can't say about anywhere else, basically. I don't know if it's the vibe of the people or just the idea of good food everywhere makes you feel at home. But that's what it is. It's home to everyone, pretty much. You come here and you just feel like, wow, I'm supposed to be here. And there's not many other places on this planet I can say that about. I don't know. That's all I got for you on that one.
No, I hear you. So let's put it this way. Next time I'm in New Orleans with the band, if you could recommend, you know, let's say one place to go eat before we go catch some music, you know, like let's say before we go see, you know, Walter Wolfman playing somewhere or something like that. What's one of your favorite, you know, local spots to grab a bite to eat?
It's not quite dinner, but Hanson's Snowballs is the shit. It's like, you've heard of snow cones probably, but this is like the real deal. New Orleans inflated richness, over the top, just totally killer snowball spot. But you got to get there before 7.
Why is that?
Because they close at 7.
Okay.
It's hot as hell during the day, so that's the ideal time to go get one.
Right.
But that would be my recommendation spot to go check out. And then from there, ask me again after you go there.
Okay, I will. Well, that's, you know, kind of getting towards the bottom of the list here. One thing I was kind of curious about, do you play a certain type or brand of guitar more than anything else? And do you mix it up at all in the studio compared to the live shows?
I generally play Tellys, but I'll play, I have a Strat, I got a Les Paul. For studio wise, I'll try out different amps and guitars, but, I got a new Tele probably like a year ago now that I've been playing pretty hard as far as road stuff.
Nice.
And I think I got that one like when we were pretty much done with the record, so I might have been on the new record somewhere. But I was pretty much using my old Tele and a Strat on the record this time. But yeah, I definitely like doing some sound experiments, but I tend to lean toward Tele and Strat.
Oh, cool.
Unless I want a Starcaster, but they're hard to find.
Yeah, a little less out there than a Tele and a Strat, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've been looking, like eBay is not helpful on that one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. My last question really, doesn't have really anything to do with music and whatnot, but I don't know if you watch basketball at all, but
I sure do.
All right, here we go. Do you have any thoughts
on that? I saw that
last
night.
Yeah, oh man, me too. I was going to say, what do you feel for the rest of the series?
Well, first, this was my short. I wanted to see Lakers Heat. I'm not a Laker fan. I'm not necessarily a Heat fan, but I'm not a Heat hater either.
Right.
I'm a Pelicans fan, which is an unfortunate name we have now, but what are you going to do? My suggestion was either the New Orleans Bounce or the New Orleans Basketball Saints, but I was outvoted by Tom Benson.
Yeah, he kind of has the final say.
Yeah, a little bit. But as far as this series, I was looking forward to San Antonio, Miami, because it's going to be a hell of a chess match, coaching wise, and then just like experience and winning pedigree versus just straight talent. So that being said, that game last night was rough, but it's not, I don't think that's the indicator of how the series is going to go. I think it's going to go seven. It looks like.
I'm going to say
Miami, just because I somewhat believe in LeBron's potential to go off and control the game like that.
I kind of think he'll figure it out.
It's going to be fucking tight. I know that, but you know,
that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
So if New Orleans ever had the ability to change their name again and somehow the Utah Jazz name was available, do you think that would be a good one?
I would be good with Utah not being called the Jazz. I don't necessarily want the name back, but it's just kind of ridiculous that that's their name. But, you know, the New Orleans basketball Saints in just black and gold uniforms, you know how they call them the New York football Giants?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go, New Orleans basketball Saints. I was going to say my other suggestion was the New Orleans Projects, but we don't really have projects here that much anymore.
No, but I have so many names
that are better than the Pelicans is the moral of the story.
I hear that. I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
I don't know if you know that Pelicans was the like minor league baseball team from like the late 1800s to like 1950s in New Orleans, which is the history behind that name, but it doesn't make me feel better about it.
No, not really. It seems like from what I read that Benson was really eager to put that name to use in some way or
yeah,
form.
Yeah, he was. He, no matter what anybody else said, he was definitely going to use that.
So, I mean, it's good that he's at least, you know, doing everything he can to keep the team, you know, down
yeah,
there and
I,
all that.
I appreciate that, at least, you know.
Yeah, but
I'll
the name is a little
Pelican over no team, though, so there you go.
Yeah. Well, all right, Ian, thank you for everything. That really, you know, that's about everything that I have for you.
Cool.
Like I said, you know, the new album will be out July 30th, and looking forward to seeing you next time you guys pass through Colorado.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I've been riding around picking up some gear with my dad this whole time, so he was getting a kick out of listening to this.
tell Otter hello for me.
All right, man. We'll catch you around up in your areas. We're going to be up there on the 4th of July. I don't know where you're at, but we're up in, like, Colorado somewhere coming up, so.
Nice. I'm down in Boulder, but I think I'm just getting back off of a tour right around then, so I'll try and make it out.
Cool. Bye, man.
All right, well, thanks so much, Ian.
Peace.
Take care.